Welcome to season 4 of the Ultimate Birth Partner podcast. I am Sally Ann Beresford, a birth keeper, author, and antenatal educator. My mission is to ensure that pregnant women and anyone who supports them feels well prepared for birth on a deep level. This podcast's aim is to offer knowledge and wisdom on topics that will help you discover not only how to step into your power and achieve your dream birth, but know why it is so important to you. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Ultimate Birth Partner podcast. Today I'm speaking to student midwife and doula Yaz, who's going to be talking to us quite candidly about what the role of becoming a midwife entails. This is a really interesting conversation and I know that you're going to take a lot away from this. Yaz's experience of becoming a midwife is fascinating, and she shares so many interesting points that I believe will be really helpful to you on your journey through pregnancy and birth. So enjoy this episode and make lots of notes, because I'm sure it's going to really help you to form a positive relationship with your midwife and think about where students might fit in to your birth experience. Yaz, welcome to the podcast. It's lovely to have you. I'm really excited for this conversation. Do you want to start by just introducing yourself?
Hi. Yeah, of course. So my name is Yaz. I met Sally Ann through my work as a doula, but I am also a student midwife. Yeah, so I've been doing it for many years. I've had a few pauses and a few family and health issues along the way. But yeah, I'm in the second year of my training at the moment.
And what made you decide to become a midwife?
I started a psychology degree when I left school, and it just wasn't feeling like I love psychology, and it's still something that very much comes into how I practice as a student midwife. But I felt the degree was not science-y enough for me. It felt a bit wishy-washy. I know that sounds that I don't mean to sound like I'm degrading it or anything like that. It wasn't for me. I like hard science, facts, etc. And I was also suffering really badly from endometriosis. So the university, actually, I asked them if I could pause to go and have surgery for my endometriosis. And because it was the second time I was doing it, they basically said, no, you're too ill for the degree, you need to leave, which I actually now know is disability discrimination, but I didn't at the time. But actually, it was a blessing because it gave me that time to sort the endometriosis out and to have a really good think about actually what it was that I wanted to do, because I was so set on psychology. I thought that was my thing. So it was, I guess, a bit of a shock that it kind of wasn't what I expected, I guess. So I can remember it was New Year's Eve 2018, I think. And I was sitting on my son's father's parents' computer and just googling what I thought I might want to do. I'd been doing a health sciences qualification just to kind of keep my brain engaged with science, and a midwife came up and I was like, oh duh, that makes so much sense. And I remember ringing my mum and being like, yeah, that's what I want to do. And she was like, mate, you've always been a midwife. Like, you're perfect for this. And so it just kind of something clicked in me. And it just ever since it's been the very core of my being. I started volunteering on a maternity care unit near where I lived at the time. And unfortunately, I fell pregnant with my son and I had really, really like awful morning sickness. So I had hypermesis. So I quite abruptly had to stop that volunteering. But I was really excited about the prospect of becoming a midwife. And when my son was 6 months old, I decided to go through the clearing process because I'd already missed the application process. And, you know, just that's kind of history. You know, I've loved it, but it's also been difficult and challenging in terms of what it actually means to be a midwife and all the political sort of things that come with that. You know, in terms of the academics, that was never an issue for me. You know, I'm a straight A student, great feedback on placement, so never really had any issues with doing the degree as such. It just, in terms of the mental, physical, emotional toll it took on me in my health and in my family life, etc. It's been personally what I feel is unnecessarily difficult. And it makes me very sad that we're training in the way that we're training, really.
Can you share a bit more about that, Yaz?
Yeah, so I guess when you enter the doors of midwifery school, as it were, you very quickly are subjected to this sort of environment where your life doesn't really feel like your own anymore. And I know that this is not only my experience, it's something that I have discussed with other students on the course. So while I can't speak for all student midwives, I can speak for a fair few people in terms of having had similar experiences. It feels very much like you're not a normal member of the public, that your university has a sort of control over your life. So from the point of view of, you know, this week you're on placement, this week you're on uni, there's no flexibility in that, etc., which is very normal. But also stemming from that, things like what you can do is your second job. So for example, the whole doula thing has become a very conscientious thing where it's been a massive balancing act, and I've had to almost convince my institution, both institutions that I've been studying at, that I'm okay to be doing it alongside the course. And really, you know, it's my private life, how I earn my money, as long as I'm not breaking the code or, you know, doing anything that's inappropriate, is actually my business. But the constraints that I've been under have affected my finances. It's affected my ability to take on work, which is obviously problematic. I, because of my health issues, can't be employed. I have to be self-employed. I need that control over my life, especially because the course is very demanding. And so there's this element of, even when you're in your private life, there's still an element of control. You know, for example, going to a party, I don't know, having a drink with your friends, if that gets posted on social media, all of a sudden you could be brought to fitness to practice. It's a very restrictive way to live, I guess. And also there's this thing of, you know, I felt a lot of pressure to be perfect, a lot of pressure of, and, you know, I can kind of understand it in the sense that, you know, you've got women and babies' lives in your hands. Like, obviously, you've got to be skilled. You've got to be competent. You shouldn't be doing anything that you aren't safe to do. But I think there's also an element of, we're human beings, we're learning, and we're allowed in many ways to make mistakes. You know, I don't know, not necessarily clinical mistakes, because obviously that affects the care of the patient, but it almost feels like if we dare question something that's wrong, or if we have a different point of view, or if we ask if something's appropriate and then they turn around and say, no, that's not appropriate, all of a sudden you're a bad student midwife. It just feels very, honestly, it's quite toxic. It's very sort of authoritarian. It's very sit down, shut up, do as I say. And I know that a lot of universities, lecturers, if they're listening to this, will kind of recoil and go, well, that's how I feel that I treat my students. And, you know, there are a lot of university lecturers that are very kind, gentle people. But at the end of the day, it's the general vibe. It's a general rhetoric of, I don't know, for example, if you want to resolve a, for example, resolving shoulder dystocia, right? I was, you know, in a skills session a few weeks ago on shoulder dystocia. And for me, it makes sense that if I've got a woman in front of me who's on all fours, who's mobile, who can move, or she's standing up, the first thing that I would do is put her on all fours and get her into a lunge, because biomechanics and physiology tells me that that is the best thing to do. And actually, the research says that it's an effective way of resolving shoulder dystocia. And often, like, you'll have a woman in the pool and her just climbing out the pool or lifting her leg up will then all of a sudden bring the baby.
Yeah.
But obviously the PROMPT acronym is McRoberts. No matter where she is, how she's positioned initially, get her into McRoberts. Know that there's science and physiology that would back me if I got her on all fours first, and then maybe tried McRoberts after if that didn't work. But I felt very, very uncomfortable, I guess. It was just kind of really difficult to have that conversation without feeling like I was putting myself at risk of being judged as unsafe or incompetent or overconfident, or, oh, is she going to be a risk? Is she going to go rogue? And that's from years of just being talked down to, being belittled, etc. And so it can feel very, very uncomfortable. And, you know, my experience at my first university was bullying. You know, there's no two ways about it. Even though I'm at a new institution now, and that new institution is incredibly supportive and fosters a much healthier environment, I'm still groomed in a certain way from my first institution. And this new institution still has some of that vibe trickling into it, even though the lecturers themselves are generally wonderful people. And so it can make it really difficult to just be yourself. You know, we're taught to be, you know, when we're midwives, we're going to be autonomous practitioners. And, you know, in university, we're very much encouraged to use our critical thinking and analytical skills. But when we actually start doing that, it comes with a lot of issues, discomfort, problems, because all of a sudden we're not in line.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, you talk about autonomous practitioner, but obviously when you enter any particular trust to work, so for example, you know, like I live in the West Midlands, so if I was a midwife, I've got probably four different trusts that I could choose to work in my immediate location. And each one of them practices completely differently. They have different guidelines, they have different policies. And so when you enter that particular trust that you've accepted a job with, you go into that, but you're still an autonomous practitioner working within their guidelines. How does that work? Can you just explain to me what that means to each individual midwife?
That's very different depending on whether you're a student or a midwife. So as a student midwife, when I enter placement and when I'm working placement, I can essentially under another midwife's PIN or her registration. So ultimately, what that means is, while to a degree I am responsible for the clinical care, I'm responsible for being safe, etc., it's under her registration that I'm providing care. So it's kind of her job to make sure that everything that I'm doing, she feels comfortable with me doing, because it would be her registration that would be vulnerable should anything happen.
I never knew that.
So in that, yeah, I'm not sure that many members of the public do. And what that means is that, you know, yes, to a degree, we do have autonomy. You know, if I feel that I don't want to do something a certain way, I have every right to say, hang on a minute, physiology is this, that the service user wants this, can we do it like this? And again, it can be difficult because it feeds into that culture of what I said earlier, which is like, how dare you, naughty girl, suggest something different. But generally speaking, my relationship with my supervisors have been a very, very positive one, where that professional discussion can happen. And ultimately, it might not always end in me being able to do the thing that I wanted to do. Often it does. Sometimes it doesn't. But I guess that autonomy is limited. And, you know, it becomes less limited the later you get onto your training, essentially. Yeah, it's very conditional to the supervising midwife's comfort levels. And I guess what we need to remember is, actually, ultimately, at the end of the day, the final decision should not be resting on me or my supervisor. It should be resting with the service user. And so ultimately, really, I should be able to offer every single option, including what, you know, the options that I'd like to offer, the options that the midwife would like to offer, and, you know, allowing the service user to make their own decision about what they feel is safe. The reality is that practice in these hospitals tends to be, this is our guideline, this is our policy, so this is what we're offering you. And they may touch on a couple of alternatives, but often the full picture is not given. And if you think about the Montgomery case and what came out of that, which was essentially we have to offer all of the options, all of the risks, all of the benefits, and allow service users to make their own decisions about what's right for them, you know, what's riskier to them, because at the end of the day, perception of risk is an individual perception, and what might be risky to you or to me might not be risky to them, or vice versa. But what tends to happen is, you know, because we are working in a sort of litigation-based, you know, litigation avoidance-based culture that uses hospital policies and guidelines to try and avoid this litigation, that freedom can feel very restricted. And what I find quite ironic about that is that, to me, if I was a service user, that would make me more keen to see, because actually I would be going, my care was very biased. You know, sometimes women feel cursed. I know that as per the NHS constitution, the NMC code and all this other relevant legislation, Human Rights Act, etc., I am entitled to make my own decisions. I am entitled to have all of the options, etc. And I'm not being given those things. So actually, as someone who's clued up, I would be more likely to see, not less likely. But unfortunately, most members of the public are not aware of this. And we rely on that as healthcare professionals. Or yeah. I don't, but healthcare professionals do. And so, you know, what that means is that they feel like they're protecting themselves by sticking to this bubble. And it's not compliant with our registration and how we're supposed to practice. So I often find myself on placement questioning these things and actually trying to remind colleagues of our obligations to respect autonomy and to give all the options and to make sure that service users are able to give informed consent to everything. And that we're not doing things like, oh, I'm just going to give you a little cup down below, or, oh, I'm just going to, you know, do a sweep while I'm in there. It's not okay. It's assault.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's assault. It's not okay. So as a student, they've bound that limit. And while I can advocate to a degree, I can't go over my supervisor's head and do something different anyway, right? I don't have that power. And there's a level of, I think, also respect for working as a team, that as a midwife, you still have a certain element of working together and making choices together. However, you are autonomous. At the end of the day, you are that service user's midwife. Mm. You know, if she's come in labor, it's one-to-one care. You're her midwife. Yeah. You know, if you're in an antenatal clinic, the appointments are one-to-one. In that moment in time, you are her midwife.
Yeah.
And so there is that element of, yes, I am thinking about the wider team. I'm thinking about the wider team skill set. I'm thinking about what's going on the ward. I'm thinking about other service users, say, when thinking about what we can offer in labor. I think there's a responsibility to being open and honest about why a certain option might potentially be more available in that circumstance, and still allowing service users to make their own decisions. And so as a qualified midwife, what I hope to be doing is still doing very much what I do in many ways as a doula, which is, these are the options that have been presented to you. Or in my case, here are the options that I'm presenting to you as a midwife. You know, obviously as a doula, these are the options that are presented to you. As a student midwife or a midwife, it's, here are the options that I'm presenting to you, because obviously doulas don't give clinical care or provide those options per se. What do you think? That's it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, that's even if the baby's at serious risk of adverse outcomes, or the mum is at serious risk of adverse outcomes. Yes, of course, I can make it very clear, I don't know, you have IVP, so intrahepatic cholestasis of pregnancy, with bile acids over 100. The research says that if we do not do anything now, there is a very strong chance that your baby won't make it. That's evidence-based care, right? That's me making it very clear that that's something that might happen, and that's a genuine reason. But I've got to be very careful that that doesn't seep into coercion, right? If you don't do this, your baby's going to die. Sounds very much like a threat.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, it's about how these things are presented in the most kind, gentle manner that still allows service users to make their own decisions. And the reality is that most people, you know, when they can see that there's a genuine concern for their baby, they'll go with what the advice is anyway.
Absolutely.
I think where we're seeing problems is when that advice is not necessarily in line with physiology. So, for example, you have a really high BMI, we need to induce you, or you can't use a birth pool. Well, hang on a second. Let's think this through. What about being overweight means categorically that baby is not going to make it? There isn't any research that with those two things alone leads to those adverse outcomes. Yes, there's a higher risk of things like gestational diabetes, but actually there are lots of women with high BMIs that are perfectly well and fine. Same with using a birth pool. The argument is that you might seize, you might have a fit, you might pass out, whatever, and then it's difficult to evacuate you. The reality is that we have equipment, we have nets, and actually if she wants to take that risk where we're saying to her, your care might be delayed because we might struggle to get you out the pool. That's her risk to take.
Yeah.
So by not blanket, not offering water births, for example, we're restricting their choices unfairly and we're not respecting their autonomy to make their own decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had so many thoughts come to my mind during this whole conversation. One thing I'll touch on is that, you know, I have had clients with a high BMI who have been made to get in and out of the pool in pregnancy to see that they are fit to get in and out. It was the most humiliating thing. And yet the client agreed to do it. I think now I would counsel and speak to them about the fact that they don't have to agree to prove that they are capable of getting in and out of a birth pool to be able to use it as a method of birth management. It's shocking. But the other thing that sprung to mind when you were talking about working with the supervisor and you're performing actions, in my head, I was thinking it's their job to prevent you from doing something unnecessary, from performing an intervention that you shouldn't be doing. It's their job to spot your errors and help you to perfect your skills that you're learning. You're on the job. You're the one that's being supported through your training process. And yet you ended up, or can often find yourself ending up having to correct their behavior, which just blows my mind. You know, for the student to have to turn around to the senior supervisor, the member of staff who's got the experience, for you to have to point out to them that what they're doing is inappropriate is just mental, crazy.
It's a very uncomfortable thing, isn't it? Because technically in the hierarchy, They're almost like my boss, right? Yeah. And in a way, it can feel like you're being disrespectful because, you know, they're the one with more years' experience. They're the one that's there to teach you. But I think that's why ultimately I think the culture needs to change in a way. We need to look at this more as we're all working together. We all have different backgrounds, different experiences, different exposures. You know, the amount of additional training I've done on top of my midwifery degree, I know many midwives who haven't done half the things that I've trained in separately from their degrees. And I'm not saying that that's right or wrong or better or worse. It's just a different experience. There are different things that you bring to the table. And I think I like to see it as working together as a team, and we're supporting each other. She's supporting me to hone in my skills. And yes, of course, there are things that supervisors might spot, you know, oh, I don't know, move that Doppler a little bit to the left, you'll get a better trace, or whatever it is, you know, moving our hands as we're helping to catch a baby. But I think there's also this thing where when you're in practice, you don't necessarily have that protected time to read the latest research and evidence or hone in on skills that you might not necessarily be using so often. Maybe you're not a rotational midwife, so you're only in community ever, really. You might get pulled to the unit occasionally, but generally you're not using intrapartum or labour skills, say, for example. And so for me, my relationship, which has always generally been a very positive relationship, has been very much about, hey, we're supporting each other. And then on the occasions where I felt maybe a little bit more uncomfortable, never felt it to be torrid in any way, but just feeling a little bit of dis-ease. It's just that respecting that everyone's an individual and everyone does things their own way. And I may not agree with it, but I don't have the right to put my values onto another person. And actually, what I also have to remember is the service user technically is not my client. They're my supervisor's client, and I'm learning how to care for people with my supervisor's client. And sometimes I have to remind myself to let go of that pressure, feeling responsible for everything everyone does. And I've got to almost protect that bubble, let's say. But actually, my job as a student is to be there to learn. And in the meantime, if I can have an extra chat just to put someone at ease or support a breastfeeding for a bit longer or suggest an alternative way of doing things, then that's great. But my job is to learn.
Absolutely.
Do you have a copy of my books yet? These award-winning, best-selling books are changing lives for tens of thousands of couples across the world as they are bridging the gap between what you learn on a standard antenatal education program and what actually happens in the birth room. Labour of Love, The Ultimate Guide to Being a Birth Partner, is fondly described as the Bible for partners. This book is intended to be read by the pregnant woman and her partner so that they both recognise how fundamental their role is to her success when planning, preparing, and giving birth to her baby. It offers a level of education that is not typically taught and shares hundreds of tips learned on my journey as a professional birth partner for over 20 years. In my book, The Art of Giving Birth, I am focusing specifically on physiological birth. So many of you are desperate to achieve an unmedicalized birth, but don't know how. Throughout the chapters, I share my 5 key principles, which will advance the knowledge you already have and support you and your partner to really understand what it takes to give birth physiologically. The first chapter of this book is available as a free download. You can find the link in the show notes or in my link tree on Instagram. I have also created a journal to accompany this book, specifically to help support the process of identifying who you are as a person and what areas you might need to work on in order to overcome some of the common obstacles faced within the maternity system. The work that comes from not only reading The Art of Giving Birth, but carrying out the suggestions within will guide you from knowing what you want to achieve to actually having the confidence to do it. Lastly, I have designed a journal with a variety of different cover options to suit all that are aimed at planning and preparing for birth in general, which make great gifts for anyone who loves to make lists, document their pregnancy journey, and explore their feelings. All of my books and journals are available to order now from Amazon across the world or any online bookstore by typing my name, Sally Ann Beresford, into the search engine at the top, or you can get copies direct from me, sallyann@birthability.co.uk, or DM me on Instagram at The Ultimate Birth Partner. If you already have a copy, I would be so grateful if you could leave a rating and review to help others find my books and journals. This is so important so that others can benefit from the knowledge and wisdom shared within the pages. Now back to this episode.
You mentioned the code earlier. What's the code, Yaz?
So the Nursing and Midwifery Council, midwife and nurses regulatory body, have a list of things that you must do as a registrant when you practice. So they come under 4 sort of main elements called the 4 P's. So it's preserve safety. So essentially just make sure that your care is safe. Prioritize people. So we've been talking about prioritizing people a lot actually in this conversation, which is essentially prioritize the needs, wants, desires of the person in your care. Make sure that they are at the center of everything that you do. Practice effectively. So that's more about working with other team members, other colleagues, you know, and collaborating effectively in that manner. So the 4th one, promote professionalism and trust, is about how you communicate, how you work collaboratively, making sure that you're acting with integrity, that kind of thing. And underneath those main headings, there are different points. So one of them might be, for example, I think 3.4, one of my favorite ones is act as an advocate for the vulnerable, challenging poor practice and discriminatory attitudes and behavior relating to their care. So, I mean, we've been talking about that a little bit, haven't we? Which is why I've mentioned it, just because in my role as a student midwife, I have to uphold this point, which is actually I am there as an advocate. I am there to challenge my colleagues when I think something is inappropriate. Likewise, my colleagues are there to challenge me when they think that I'm doing something inappropriate. And, you know, again, when you've got that supervisor-student relationship, that seems very relevant. But it, even when qualified, it's the same thing. It's about keeping each other not only supported, but also accountable. It's about having that mutual respect for each other, but at the same time, ultimately respect for the service user and making sure that she is at the center of everything that we do, including her emotional welfare as well as her clinical welfare.
I mean, I'm confident that barely anyone knows about the code of conduct, or if they've heard of it, they've probably never looked at it or read it. I mean, I would recommend everybody takes a look because there are some really interesting points on there. And it can really support you as a pregnant woman or as a doula or a care provider in other ways to really fully understand the role that the midwife holds in your pregnancy journey, your birthing experience, and for you to be able to use that code if you feel that the person supporting you isn't actually doing it correctly. I mean, to some extent, it could be quite challenging to speak to somebody in your birth about the fact that they're not upholding a certain aspect of the code. But knowing about the code would help you to perhaps replace that person with someone else, do you think?
I mean, it's difficult because I'd never encourage using the code as a weapon.
No.
You know, the code is there to support practitioners to understand their obligations and duties to the service user. I think you're right. It's very valuable for service users, for doulas, to understand specifically what the role of the midwife is, or nurse, because it's also for nurses.
Yeah.
And to kind of understand what element of those things they're trying to do for you at the time. And certainly if you feel that there's an element of the code that's not being upheld, it would definitely be valuable to try and have that conversation. I wouldn't encourage sort of throwing the book at them, as it were, because I think that would just get people's backs up. But certainly having an understanding of, you know, I understand that this is something that is within your remit. Would you mind, I don't know, rephrasing the question that's more in line with this? Or it might be, for example, a lot of doulas, I think, have clients whose wishes aren't being respected. So you may want to say to the midwife, look, I understand your concerns and everything, but my understanding is that under the NHS Constitution, under the code, under human rights, I do have to have my autonomy respected. And while I absolutely respect your opinion as a practitioner, my values and my perception of risk means that X, Y, and Z is what I want. And so I believe that it's your responsibility to provide that for me in the kindest way possible. And that can, it can be really difficult to find the right words and to do it in the right way. But I think, you know, maintaining that relationship between service user and service provider is really important. You know, at the end of the day, human factors is a real thing. You know, if there's a breakdown in the relationship, that is potentially going to create an unsafe situation for everyone involved. And we don't want that.
No. And in fact, we're more likely to see somebody trying to befriend a care provider that they didn't feel safe with, rather than challenge them, which is quite sad, isn't it? Because, you know, when you actually see somebody who is clearly feeling a little bit vulnerable or scared with that person, but just complying so that they don't feel that that person will harm them or hurt them, makes me want to cry. But actually, I've witnessed it on many occasions. So I do understand how hard it is to stand up for yourself when you are in an extremely vulnerable state. And I think that's why it's so important to arm yourself in pregnancy, so that you're either having external support from your birth partner or doula, birthkeeper, whomever you may have asked to join you in that experience, or that you are fully aware of your rights and what is the thing that you need to say in advance, so that you can actually try and prevent those circumstances or situations from happening.
Yeah, and I think you've hit the nail on the head there, haven't you? Is if you go into your first antenatal appointment, you know, your booking appointment, kind of with an understanding of what the midwife's role is, it's almost useful to help guide you through what to expect almost. And in a way, I think if someone came to me for care and kind of understood what my role is and what my obligations are and how I'm supposed to practice, I would really welcome that, because I think it then makes my job easier. They kind of understand, you know, where I'm coming from, why I'm saying the things that I'm saying. And actually, this is why I find it really funny that people get funny about doulas, because actually, while doulas aren't there to judge people's practice, they are there to help clients be listened to, respected, etc. Being a doula has only arisen out of circumstance. It's only arisen because routinely, women's autonomy, women's rights, birthing people's freedoms have been undermined, disrespected, etc. And, you know, I'm not here slagging off midwives. You know, there are some brilliant, excellent, incredible midwives out there, just like there are some fantastic obstetricians. But every profession has people that are better at their jobs and maybe not so good at their jobs. And yeah, personality, you know, different personalities, different worldviews that with other people can clash. And so, you know, I think antenatal educators and doulas always talk to women about be really educated on what happens in pregnancy and birth. Look into your options. If you're diagnosed with a condition, do your own research, etc. And that's all well and good. But I think having a core understanding of what the role of the midwife is can take that one step further and just support a collaborative relationship between yourself and your midwife.
Yeah, absolutely. So Yaz, during your training, what interesting things have you learned? What really stands out for you with regards to how you've progressed in your knowledge and what you know now about midwives in general and what you love about the training itself?
I think for me, the big thing that I've learned at uni that still like blows my mind every time I kind of look at it is epigenetics. So this idea that our environment in the womb and how we give birth can affect not only your health as the pregnant person, but also your child's health, and also your child's child's health, and also your child's child's health. And I just find that just mind-blowing. And extending from that, you know, the midwife's role in public health, epidemiology, etc., is a big thing for me. I really enjoy looking at how we can support the whole health and the long-term health of families. And it's not really something that you associate with midwifery, is it? You know, most people, I think, associate midwives with delivering babies, but actually our role is so much more than that. And I love that, you know, we come into people's lives during the most or one of the most important times in their lives, and we can have a lasting effect on their future, their whole health, and their the health of future generations in their family. And I think there's something really, really beautiful about that. I also love, you know, that relationship that you build, you know, sitting in an antenatal clinic or spending your whole 12 and a half hour shift in a labor room with a woman, and that sacred space that can be created for her is really, really beautiful. And as much as I can do a degree of that as a doula, I think being that person's whole thing, you know, because a midwife still does doula stuff, you know, they still hold space, they still provide emotional support, practical support. They may not have as much time for it because you've got loads of paperwork to do, etc. But as a student, I have that luxury to go, oh, screw the paperwork. You know, my supervisor will do that. I'm just going to sit with you. And so in that space, I almost become more of my doula self. And it's so nice that I can support that and then also catch her baby, help to resolve her PPH if she has a big bleed, help to resuscitate her baby if needed, whatever it is, you know, it's my hands that are doing those things. My hands, the person that has that relationship with the person, is the first person touching her baby, is the person supporting her when there's an emergency. And there's just something so beautiful about that thread of continuity. I think in terms of content that I've learned in lectures, my last module was really interesting because we touched on all different elements of health, from nutrition and breastfeeding, so pregnancy nutrition and like breastfeeding, to, you know, sexual health and social factors and the social determinants of health and alcohol and drug abuse and, oh God, what else did we cover? Like physiotherapy, you know, and pelvic health and anything that might affect the way you carry a baby and give birth or affect your health after pregnancy was covered in this module. And it was very much a whistle-stop tour, but it was really nice to be getting into the nitty-gritty of women's health and what it means to be a birthing woman in the context of this day and age. I also just love physiology. You know, I think my pure physiology modules have always been my favorites.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's just so amazing what our bodies can do, you know. And even to this day, you know, when I think about the other day, I was talking to someone about how labor is initiated and, you know, what the baby's adrenals do to start that process, etc. And it's just incredible.
It really is. I mean, you've got obviously all this wisdom, all this knowledge, all this experience, and yet you still went and did your doula training alongside. What was that like? Why did you decide to do that?
So, I mean, I think I explained, didn't I, at the beginning of this call, that I've had a couple of pauses in my degree. That's been because of health, but also because of essentially the way I was treated by my last faculty. So when I had my first pause, it was during the first lockdown. And, you know, despite the fact that first year student midwives had been pulled from placement and our lecturers were online, I couldn't go back after wanting to step off to protect my health because my university just wouldn't have me back and they wanted me to start the year again. Purely because I'd missed so much, which everyone was missing a lot. So it felt a little bit, I would say, challenging, that I felt like I was being kept from trying to do something that I really wanted to do with my life. And that was really difficult for me. So I mean, I toyed with the idea of being a doula before I went on to the midwifery degree, just because I thought, well, I don't have to do a degree to do that. You know, I can do it straight away. I can be my own boss, etc. But as I've said, loving the science, it, you know, really being able to provide that clinical care is something that is quite important to me. So I was sitting, you know, in my house during this lockdown thinking, well, what can I do to try and make me feel like I'm doing something to improve my development, as it were, as a student midwife? What can I do to support my studies? What can I do to be the best version of a midwife that I can be? And I thought, okay, well, what's important to me as a midwife? You know, yes, there's this element of clinical care, but it's also about being there, isn't it? Supporting women holistically, wholly, you know, and doulas are the experts at that, aren't they? And so it just felt right. You know, I needed to bring an income in, firstly. But also it just felt right in terms of learning from the people whose job it is to do this day in, day out, support women and birthing people to have the best experience that they possibly can, supporting their emotional and physical health as wholly as they possibly can. So yeah, I just felt like I wanted to learn from some experienced people. And so I did a doula training course and started working as a doula virtually, because obviously I was extremely clinically vulnerable, so I couldn't go anywhere. And obviously at the time, because of lockdown, we couldn't see anyone anyway. And, you know, as time went on and I went back to my degree the following academic year, I had enjoyed it so much that I didn't want to stop. I just felt it was giving me so much of these soft skills that we're not able to prioritize so much as student midwives, because we've got other things that we need to do and we've got policies and guidelines that we're kind of restricted by, etc. So yeah, just being able to be with that woman in any way she needed me to be, without any kind of restriction on, oh, you're spending too much time with her on this, you need to do this, or I need to get things signed off, or whatever. It was just really nice just to not have any of that pressure, just be there with her. And so I got the blessing of my university. They were nervous about it, because obviously there is scope for blurred boundaries, but I am very clear on my boundaries and I've remained clear on my boundaries. And I know what my scope of practice is as a doula. And yeah, it's just been a wonderful experience. And it showed in my feedback. You know, there've been a couple of comments from supervising midwives that have said, you know, your work as a doula has really supported you to become an excellent student midwife. And you know, well done for finding your own way of experiencing being with women. And the other thing, of course, is that student midwives, some of them qualify never having seen a physiological birth. I've seen many. And being able to just sit in that room, not responsible for clinical care, and watch physiological birth unfold has been so beneficial for my learning. And it's really ingrained my trust in biology and my ability to sense when something isn't going as it should and when it's to intervene.
Do you think doula training and supporting women in that way, without being responsible for their care, as it were, in inverted commas, is something that should be incorporated into midwifery training?
100%.
I agree.
Absolutely. 100%. I think our first year, firstly, I don't think the midwifery degree should be 3 years. I think it needs to be longer. I think we're cramming too much in too small a space of time. We're burning out. I think we need to bring the bursary back, because I think that, you know, people are getting into stupid amounts of debt. And there are so many students that I know that have had to drop off the course just purely because they can't afford to be on it. And I don't think that's right. You know, at the end of the day, we're working for free for the NHS. And, you know, I think there needs to be an element of respect for that almost. And so I think it's absolutely ghastly that we don't have bursaries anymore. We get the learning support fund, say £5,000 for people who don't have children, or £7,000 for people that have children a year. That doesn't stretch very far though, does it? Especially when you've got childcare to pay for, etc. And on top of that, our universities don't recommend we work on top of our degrees. and there is very little time for doing additional work. So we're either burning ourselves out, also working part-time jobs completely almost, or, you know, we're struggling financially. And even working second jobs, still potentially a lot of people do struggle financially. So I think firstly, it should be extended. And then when you take away that financial pressure and you have more time, you have more scope and space to really hone in the basics before you're right in there on the induction day, you know, dealing with complex. And there are a lot of students that have complained about, you know, actually we barely see normal. And a lot of students don't know truly, wholly, what normal physiological birth is. How are we supposed to support it as registrants if we've never seen it as students?
Yeah, so hard to understand how you can confidently attend a birth if it's something you never saw as a student midwife. I mean, for me as a doula, what I would really like is for the relationship between midwife and doula to be more respected, because I think that even now, I've been a doula for over 23 years, and things have definitely got worse, not better, because in the old days, I could confidently look at a client and say, oh no, it's absolutely fine. The midwives are great. You know, if I'm there, I just make them a cup of tea and smooth them down and, you know, help support them. And they can see that I'm not there to do anything but wipe your brow and feed you snacks. But the role of a doula has really changed. And now doulas are more often stepping up to be an advocate in a way that is very different from the old days, where you might have to say, oh, would you like to ask a few questions? Now it's much more about you saying quite clearly, are you okay with that? Do you want more information? You know, and almost stepping in and not putting your hand anywhere particular, because I'm not one for doing that at all, but being really clear that nothing should progress until this person is giving clear, informed consent. It's not always necessary, but, you know, the role has evolved and a client expects that of you in some cases. So it's no surprise that doulas are seen as the devil in some birth experiences. And one of my more recent ones, where my client was being asked to have a vaginal examination at her home birth, and she quite clearly all by herself said, no, thank you. No, thank you. Not right now. No. Eventually, the midwife took the father to one side and said, look, we are going to have to bypass your doula. On the event that they thought I was the one blocking the vaginal examination, which my client said that was basically infantilizing her by saying she wasn't capable of making her own well-informed decisions. But ultimately, here we were, where there was no relationship between doula and midwife. There was nothing. It was almost like I was seen as a blocker. And I really want that to go away. Mm-hmm. I really want that to just not be the case, that any care provider sees the doula as being somebody that comes between the woman and her decision making.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I mean, the way I try to approach doulaing is to build that relationship with the midwife as well. And they're just as much to support the midwife as I am to support the family, because ultimately she's got a lot going on. You know, it's not an easy job. It can be a very stressful job. And actually, she's got a lot of pressure on her a lot of the time. And so for me, it's about holding space for everyone and supporting that beautiful cuddle around the woman. And I don't know whether it's because I'm a student midwife and I speak their language, that generally speaking, that's been my experience or not. But I've certainly felt that as a doula, that has been my experience. There have been a couple of experiences like yours where it's become uncomfortable and I've potentially been seen as the problem. But, you know, it's so funny how people get so defensive by asking, can you explain the reason why you feel this way? Can you make it clearer to my client what exactly it is you're saying? Can you give her some of her blood test results so she can understand in numbers what this means? Somehow that's seen as a bad thing. And people get defensive. In reality, all we're trying to do is to support utter and complete clarity so people can make an informed decision. And I do actually think a lot of it has got something to do with when a practitioner is trying to back a woman into the corner and get them to listen to whatever it is they're wanting them to do, they don't want to be challenged. When you practice like I do, where you're completely open to whatever it is the woman wants, you don't mind being challenged because ultimately you're not there with your own agenda trying to get them to do whatever it is you want them to do. You're trying to get them to make their own decision that feels right for them. So you welcome this challenge. You welcome this dialogue and debate and context. And so actually, I love working with doulas as a student midwife. I just think it makes my life a whole lot easier, to be honest. Yeah, it's really sad. It is really sad that that relationship has broken down. And I'm not quite sure how we fix it. Because I think we're in such a defensive culture these days in the NHS.
I think for me, it is easy to fix for the most part, because as a doula in the birth space, I sit on my hands and do absolutely nothing and say nothing at all. And midwives quite quickly can see that it is only when major decisions have to be made or they are being put under pressure from the person at the end of the phone at a home birth, for example. If you're coming up to a shift change, they're thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I'm getting a lot of pressure to find out where this woman is at. I've offered her 6 times now for a vaginal examination, and each time she says no, but my supervisor on the phone is kicking off and saying, well, I'm not going to send out another 2 midwives if this woman isn't even in established labour. So for me, as a confident doula, I can take that midwife into the kitchen and I can calmly say, look, I can clearly tell that you're under a lot of pressure here, but you've asked her many times now and she has declined each and every time. I'm not going to try and convince her to accept a procedure she doesn't want. How can we work together to ensure that this labour progresses as quickly and as easily as possible by keeping her oxytocin levels as high as we can? You know, and when you have these very calm, very confident conversations about the woman's decisions, the type of birth that she wants, often it can be smooth and it can go well. It's only when midwives do weird shit like take the husband out of the room and say, we need to bypass your doula, that things can often then become really ugly and really uncomfortable for no reason. But yeah, on the whole, I, like you, have met so many phenomenal midwives, and it's inspirational just how smart these people are and how supportive they are and how they really do respect women and their rights, their human rights, their bodily autonomy, and every part of the journey that that woman is on, they respect. But obviously they are working in a system that doesn't always support them and it makes it harder. So I'm so grateful for your conversation today, your candid responses. The fact that you're going to be out there very soon as a fully qualified midwife and knowing that there are so many like you who really do show women that respect is just amazing. So thank you, Yaz.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so kind of you to say. I've really enjoyed that. It's been lovely.
Yeah, it has. As you may already know, Yaz, I always ask every single guest of mine at the end of our conversation for a top tip. It can be of anything. Anything you like. What's your top tip for people listening?
I think mine would be, when you find out you're pregnant, it can be just a really overwhelming time where there's lots of things going on and lots of people asking questions, and it can feel like there's a lot to do. But I think for me, what I really like to see in women is that they've had an initial think about what they want their journey to look like and what they want their birth to look like, kind of in those early stages of pregnancy. And if they're not sure, to start looking into that side of things, you know, whether they might want a home birth, what's the physiology behind birth? Because, you know, doing the antenatal classes late in pregnancy, I understand why it's done. It's the whole concept of not forgetting stuff. But actually, I think that if you have an understanding of where you want to be at the beginning of your pregnancy, you're much more likely to be able to follow a journey that meets that goal. And you can work with your midwife to shape that almost. And if there's complications along the way that kind of derail that a bit, you can reassess. But I think having an initial idea when you first fall pregnant and you're first accessing care can really help the midwife understand what's important to you and shape the care appropriately.
Amazing. Thank you so much. That's a really, really useful tip.
You're welcome.
So where can people find you, Yaz?
So my Instagram is birth.beautiful. My company is Birth Beautiful. So, you know, got website, etc. I am taking on some clients at the moment, but not loads, just because my midwifery training is obviously very busy, but I am available and my inbox is always open if there are any questions, as always.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful to chat to you. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you. You too. It's been really great. Take care.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Ultimate Birth Partner podcast and listening to this episode. I love having deep and thoughtful discussions about all things labour and birth. If you enjoyed it, please leave a rating and review and share it with your friends. If you want to receive a notification of the next episode, then don't forget to hit subscribe. If you would like to purchase either of the books that accompany this podcast, then head over to your online bookseller and search for Labour of Love, The Ultimate Guide to Being a Birth Partner, or The Art of Giving Birth, 5 Key Physiological Principles. Follow me on Instagram at The Ultimate Birth Partner. And if you go to the link in my bio, you will find my Linktree page, which has all the links you need to access many of my services, including booking a course for you and your partner to learn how to succeed in achieving your dream birth.